would cause that huge continent that...
We're in front of Bunny Shoes at the perennial Stefan bench with the various, the very notorious Robert Stefan. How are you, Robert?
Fine, thank you. Not feeling notorious at all.
No, well, perhaps notorious in some quarters, completely unknown in most others. You mentioned that you've been getting your usual morning coffee on the bench welcome when you show up, and occasionally a Harley Davidson and a strange car parked here in the handicap zone that doesn't seem to be handicapped that plays loud music and so forth. But generally speaking, it's been a hands-off policy toward you?
Yes, although I should say that, no, the Harleys have not been bothering me. But yes, coffee every morning by somebody, and I believe it's a gentleman who doesn't look handicapped at all. He parks his car right next to me, and leaves the radio on during the day, on a religious station normally, and often comes by and will... and revs his engine for a while. Yes, maybe that's what you were referring to.
Kind of a nice counterpoint to your atheistic sign, there is no God.
Yes.
I should remind our listeners that we're talking to a man, a homeless man running for presidential candidate, served 90 days in the county jail for sleeping this fall, actually for trespass, because you, in protest, slept on the porch of the Homeless Services Center once they had refused to allow you into their program because you had a dispute with their rules. And you've been here since October on this bench, of course, with a month and a half hiatus when you were barred from the bench by court order. And in essence, you are engaging in a kind of a visual theater of life protest to pose yourself, to wit, a homeless person, and homeless-looking person, bearded, an umbrella, wearing a safari hat with lots of black masking tape on it, a tattered, well not tattered, but certainly worn orange coat about you as a kind of a cover for your knees, and a relatively grubby blue coat.
Well, yes, it is unfortunate it has become grubby, but this is the coat I had when I became homeless, and I'm happy to still have it. I'm kind of attached to it. Hopefully we'll have it when I am no longer homeless.
Is there anything you want to say regarding your platform? Of course, includes many, many items. I haven't stressed it because presidential politics doesn't interest me much, frankly, Robert. I'm more interested in local politics, legalized drugs, legalized prostitution, and the drug penalty. Actually, a series of fine planks, but you have a new plank you've added.
Yes, it's not on the platform, but I was speaking to one of a UC Santa Cruz student, and it came up. It's one of my planks which is not listed because I've run out of room. And I thought I should mention it, and that is, I'm against the mutilation of humans before they're 18. I think that 18 people can decide to mutilate.
Clitorectomies, perhaps?
Excuse me?
Clitorectomies on minors?
Circumcision, actually.
Are you saying that if I want to have myself circumcised, I should not be able to do so if I'm 16?
That's true. Until you're 18, you should not be allowed to.
You are just, you know... The firm hand of authority. Well, Robert, I'll pass it on to the audience. Anything you want to add?
That they should have a good day and come by and lend me tons of support.
I don't know if that's a disguised appeal for money or just for I don't know, sexual favors, or perhaps just good, friendly comradeship?
All of the above.
That's the word from Robert Steffen here at the bench at 1350 Pacific Avenue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, a baby cries in the morning sun. The mother looks down on her fatherless one. The rescue team goes on and on. More good men going down. And her eyes, they showed the tears of pain as she looked out on her window pane. Her man's not coming home again. More good men going down. Yes, he died when he was just 22, a young man in his prime. And he left a wife and a baby boy. More good men going down. Oh, the mother will live and the boy will grow. In a few more years you will never know that mother from those other times has lost another man to the mine. More good men going down. Yes, the baby cries in the morning sun. The mother looks down on her fatherless one. The rescue team goes on and on. More good men going down. More good men going down.
You want me to give your name, or do you want to be anonymous?
Anonymous.
But you've been working with Labor Ready, right?
Yes.
So, what's been cooking with Labor Ready? You say there's some harassment lately? What's the story? Have I got that right?
Yes. By the Santa Cruz Sheriffs. Before, Santa Cruz Sheriffs were a little bit of a... They would keep a blind eye. For instance, one time they caught me sleeping in an area, and the cop looked at my paycheck stubs and said, quote unquote, for us to give you a ticket is going to cost you more money than what you're making, so why don't you just disappear someplace else where we won't see you? So they
How
were...
How long ago was this?
August.
Okay.
August, September, around there.
And this happened once, twice?
Twice.
And how long were you in pretty much the same area? And this is a certain part of the county?
At the same spot.
And how long had you been at that spot?
On and off for about a month. And some people were there for even longer. And the cops all went down and found their campsite and gave them 24 hours to vacate. Mm-hmm. And if they came back, the cop came back and they weren't fully all the way packed up, and the cop gave another 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. So you think they were being relatively mellow about things, but still forcing most people to move on?
Basically, yeah. Like, they had some complaints because there was a few people which were on the stupid side.
Now, by campsites, are we talking about, you know, like open fires and cooking stoves or what?
The most was candles.
And we're talking about... What, just a sleeping bag by night and...
A tent.
And a tent. Yeah, we're talking about a sort of a non-populated area, or...?
Pretty much so, yeah.
Like a forested area, or a...
Forest.
Stores nearby, or...?
The bridge on Soquel, underneath the bridge area, that real wooden area.
Now, that's actually in the city limits you're talking about. You're talking about Soquel, the city, or Soquel Avenue downtown?
It is right by... It's between Labor Ready and 41st Ave.
So that is outside the city?
Yes.
In Capitola, in fact.
Incorporated.
Now, has the Capitola police come after you or for any purposes? Or?
No, sir.
And do you think that's because you're outside the jurisdiction? They haven't noticed you? What do you attribute this?
Both. They haven't seen us, and they haven't seen anybody there. And most of the guys from Labor Ready, even if they do drink or do whatever they do, they usually keep it on a low key.
basis.
And when you say us, how large of a group are we talking about?
Varies from 10, 25 to 35, but no more. And most of all those guys do work. Some of them would work five, sometimes 6 days a week.
Are these people who, you're talking show up at labor ready in the day, or are these people who are just camping together at night, or both?
Both. They would go on up there, camp in certain vicinities of an area. Then they would go on up in the morning, labor ready, to work.
So these are working people?
Working poor, yes.
And these are almost all men?
All men. All of them are working at labor ready. All of them are taxpayers.
Are we talking all pretty much white men, or?
Majority, yes.
How many Latinos there?
No Latinos.
There's a lot of Latinos, you know, outside the lumber yard here.
Yes, I know.
I take it some at labor ready as well?
No. It's majority of it is white and maybe Afro-Americans. Mm-hmm. Maybe one or two Afro-Americans just passing through between jobs or whatever.
Right.
After we got moved out of that area, we moved to a field which was right next to, across the street from 7-Eleven. And the sheriffs knew people were camping out there. I've camped out there occasionally too myself. And the only thing that he said was to keep your campsite clean. You know, we just want to see who's there. And came in and took off. And then after a couple months ago, a while back, a person named Ralph Fritz died, which worked at Labor Ready, which died of a drug overdose.
He was homeless as well.
Yes, he was. And after that, a lot of the people started getting camping tickets. The sheriffs went down to the camp area. A person that saw the police removing Fritz, the gentleman, the deceased gentleman, his exact words were quote-unquote, they desecrated his campsite and they desecrated him when they were removing the body and his belongings.
And what did he mean by desecrate?
Just the way that they were treating the dead person, by throwing his stuff away, derogatory comments.
And
this is hearsay from a person that was there. I want to inject that, though. Then after that, people that would go on up there to sleep, everybody, after about a week or 2 weeks after that, everybody was given notice that the police would come on out, that everybody had to leave the area, and if they were there, they would be arrested for trespassing. And a couple people were arrested for trespassing, spent a few days in jail, and were given a fine and so many hours community service. And etc.
Around the period of September or October, November?
November and December, around there. Mm-hmm. Then after the person who died, and people were being arrested, and one person I know was just, he bought himself a van who worked at Labor Ready, and everything was legal, insurance, title, license, and all that. He was just waiting for a job in the back seat of his car in the labor-ready parking lot. A sheriff officer came on up and started asking him, what are you doing here? Do you work at labor-ready? And started questioning him for no reason whatsoever in a parking lot of labor-ready.
When was this?
About 3-4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And basically the people that were at labor-ready, they did not want to deal with... they rather make their own money by working, by being on the system, by trying not to deal with River Street or being a burden on the system, but to be productive members of society, to pay their taxes. And believe me, I paid my taxes. I paid about $100 a month in taxes. So right there, that is saying I am a productive, so-called productive member of society.
All right. So... there's been this crackdown on labor-ready folks. Have you been out there recently?
Have I been out there?
Yeah.
Yes.
And what's happening in the last few days? Today, of course, is the 12th.
I haven't been out there for 2 days, but basically there's still a little bit of a harassment here and there. Some people have been ran off. Labor-ready came on up with a sign saying that you had to be there by 4 o'clock. If you're out there before 4 o'clock... You could be arrested for trespassing or a fine, or given a citation for trespassing.
Labor Ready is a place where books come for people who want to do what kind of work?
It varies. Basically, they would get contracts from certain businesses, some factories, mainly construction in the construction field of doing labor, from unskilled labor to skilled labor. Like I know one person which is operating a heavy equipment operator, mm-hmm. to carpenters, to people just sweeping and picking up trash at construction sites, to dock work at certain warehouses, moving furniture, people which would need, homeowners which would need somebody that they're planning to move and they need some help moving, you know, loading up their van, other furniture and stuff.
And you talk about resisting this kind of police harassment, or folks pretty much feel there's not much they can do. What do they feel?
Oh, well, what can, when you're poor in this country, what can you really do? Mm-hmm. I mean, the police do not go on up in, if there's any problems with, like, troll busters, is a homeless person can go on up to a cop and tell them? No, a cop doesn't care less. Now, if you're productive, if you're working, if you're trying to do something, there should be a little bit more of a
response and respect.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
And I was talking to one person, you know, a couple other people that in Las Vegas. I've traveled around across country, and in Phoenix, Arizona, if you are working day labor or if you have a job, you could stay at the place for X amount of money, such as $20 a week. $80 a month, which it's not a lot of money, but it's into a dorm where you're able to have a place where you could stay at, you keep your stuff, you're able to go to work or try to go work and do something to get yourself to get back off the, to get off the street and back on your feet and become a responsible member of society. But it seems like the city council doesn't want to, they rather have people
here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, seems like they rather have people to keep them down instead of helping people up in this town.
I, at least in terms of continuing to criminalize people who sleep at night, continuing to have on the books the downtown ordinances, making it legal to sit down, ask for spirit change, engage in other kinds of behaviors which homeless people get targeted for, I would have to agree with you on that. Have you noticed any particular hostility by the city police here in Santa Cruz?
A couple. I was coming down from a campsite, and a cop was following me around, and he stopped me, and I camp not pretty close to the levee, and two Santa Cruz police officers stopped me, and they asked me, were you doing drugs on the levee, were you doing this, and then they were trying to get information if I knew anybody or doing anything. And I don't do drugs, so what can I say? I don't know. And after that, they let me alone. And a few times I've got a few looks from police officers in this town. And usually, like in other cities, if a cop sees you homeless, they usually have a live and let live attitude. But in this one, the cops would just give you a bit of a mad dog look.
Interesting. So, I'm going to call you Pepsi for the purposes of this interview.
Yeah.
Pepsi, you said you also are not unfamiliar with people getting assaulted. In fact, you yourself were almost assaulted.
Yeah.
And that was an interview about 4 or 5 days ago with Pepsi, also known as Nightmare. He actually was our co-host during the last show. Difficult for him because it was one of his first shows, but as you can see, he's quite articulate on these issues. He's a homeless person and a working homeless person, and he's been encountering difficulties. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, under heavy surveillance by the Federal Communications Commission. As regular listeners now know, we've had a visit from them, according to our man on the battleground, the V-Man, who was actually around the studio at the time, and gave something of a report, which I'm going to repeat a bit later. He sent me a nice email on the subject. This is Free Radio, and if you want to get in touch with us, our phone number is 427-3772. That's the studio line. You can be live on the air. We want to hear from you. If you want to catch us off the air, if you have business for the station, want to get involved, want to donate money, want to just find out what's going on, it's 427-4523. And if you want to reach us by mail, Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Post Office Box 7507, that's 95061. Email is frsc@cruzio.com. frsc@cruzio.com. We have an incoming call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, hi, I'm calling with the City Council agenda. For the City Council special meeting that's coming up January 18th.
That's next Tuesday.
That's correct. And there are two sessions. There is a 3 o'clock session where they're going to City Council advisory body interviews at the Council Chambers.
So all you folks who want to get up in there and advise the City Council, and that would include, I guess, the Homeless Issues Task Force, which has an opening because Sherry Connable has resigned, for which most of us are grateful, and I guess some of us are not.
And she was Catherine Byers' appointee, so anyone wanting to take her place probably should contact Catherine Byers and let her know that they're interested.
Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of advisory bodies at 3 o'clock next Tuesday, day after tomorrow, at the City Council Chambers. Go ahead.
Okay, and at the 7 o'clock session, there's only one item on the agenda, and that's the Downtown Plaza.
This is the attempt to eminent domain the Rittenhouse property that's across from the Cinema 9 and the Cooper House?
Well, I've heard that they're still hopeful that they might be able to arrange a purchase directly from Louis Rittenhouse.
And for those who don't know, eminent domaining means essentially seizing the property, and you need 5 votes on the City Council to do that. And I guess Rotkin, Hernandez, and Matthews have not yet shown any tendency to go along with that. Have you been following this much at all, Becky?
Only a little bit. I haven't attended any of the meetings, but it does sort of break down. Some people on the council are very much for the plaza, like Mayor Keith Sugar and Catherine Byers, Chris Crone, and
Tim Fitzmaurice.
Other council members like Mike Rotkin are opposed to it or want it at a different location.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that there's been a lot of cheerleading for this by Bruce Bratton in the Metro Santa Cruz. Almost every week you see a paragraph or two by Bruce pushing the plaza, and you get, I guess, Kennedy, a former council member, a former activist, former human rights initiator, and then, of course, subsequently a mayor who gave us the anti-homeless downtown ordinances. He's been kind of raising some questions sort of as a sort of a political entree. He had editorial or opinion.
A recent op-ed piece
opinion
in the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Yeah, in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which he played the wise old elder statesman, Rotkin out of power, giving his views on things. But my take on the plaza has always been it's kind of a done deal. They have 4 votes. I mean, they may have to find some property to do it and kind of wade through a lot of stuff, but since they all agree on it, one of the few things that the Byers, Crone, Fitzmaurice, Sugar majority does agree on, what's all the hubbub? I guess when they start trashing homeless people and street people by saying, oh, they're a bad element, they being the people opposed to the plaza, then you can always weigh in and say, take your bigotry to Selma, thank you very much, or Serbia, or Kosovo, whatever.
It does seem that the main opposition to the plaza comes from the same groups that are so against homeless people being in the downtown area.
Right. Well, it's interesting that I'm wondering how Michael Schmidt and Peter Eberle will weigh in on this. I think Eberle favored, at least Rittenhouse's property rights on this issue, and I spoke to him at City Council. I know he's away on vacation. He's the executive director of the Downtown Association, but Eberle and Schmidt have recently come out for safe zones for homeless people, which puts them, of course, in advance of the council in the lead. City Council will not even put forward a proposal or support a proposal for safe zones, at least as of last Tuesday. They had nothing they wanted to do.
I also noticed that the council was completely silent with the reports, even from Police Chief Belcher about the huge number of assaults on homeless people in 1999.
It was really shocking, those figures from Belcher. What, 51 assaults reported against homeless people, and of course we only had 4 that we knew of that had been reported, whereas we had dozens of unreported assaults, indicating to me that first the police chief is had kept his mouth shut about this all year. One might say inexplicably, but I don't think inexplicably, because I think he likes to think of his town as a hate-free zone and where all is running smoothly, when in fact there are vendettas and hate gangs going out beating up homeless people. That's obviously not true. And of course, there's always been the suspicion by some that the police department has in the early 80s is not entirely guiltless or unconnected with some of these beatings. We've had a few reports that have concerned us about that, though nothing really specific enough. That was one thing I noticed about that report. Any thoughts on that report, Becky?
Well, that report only came after 4 or 5 months with Homeless Issues Task Force member Lucy Chemnitzer making numerous phone calls to the police department requesting those sorts of stats. And they finally came out, I think, greatly delayed. She'd been given quite a song and dance along the way about how it was impossible to compile those figures. It would be prohibitively time-consuming to do so. And then here comes a one-page report.
You would think that this one-page report would blow the council away and get even that fine ignorer of homeless issues, Michael Rotkin, off his proverbial duff with some action. But the answer, of course, is no. And a part of it may be because they feel so entrenched and they see it as the sleeping ban issue. If they give on in this, they reveal their endless hypocrisy over the last decade. In fact, they'd be showing some sort of enlightened perspective. The other thing I noticed, and I was going to talk about, was that Belcher, our police chief, released 1 year's worth of stats, but he didn't talk about how many people were in custody or were considered as suspects in any of these homeless beatings.
Really, as far as we know, there's been one conviction. That was Aaron Birch. And then there was a minor, a juvenile, who was also arrested with Aaron Birch. And we haven't heard the outcome of whether he was convicted or not.
Mm-hmm. And I know that the obvious thing to do, particularly since Belcher claimed that there was no rise in hate crime attacks, and these are obviously, at least some of them, hate crime attacks, or no rise in homeless assaults, is for him to divulge the stats for previous years. And I've already requested of Homeless Issues Task Force Chair Linda LeMaster that she request Belcher get those figures, because I think they are important, and I think, you know, that will sort of give us more information.
Yes, it's the obvious question is, are these assaults against homeless people showing an upturn in violence against the homeless, as we suspect, or is this a normal statistics for a normal year?
Well, also, Belcher's department loses on all counts. I mean, if it isn't really an upturn, and the previous years have had similar high numbers of attacks on homeless people, proportionately considered, there were 500 assaults reported and 50 of them were on homeless people last year, something like that?
Less than 500, 400 and...
So that's more than 10% of the assaults are on a population that's supposed to be 1-3% of the population in Santa Cruz, the homeless population, which is quite frightening, actually. It shows that they're being targeted, or if they're not being targeted, they certainly are exceptionally vulnerable. And what is the answer of the city council to this? Has Mayor Sugar called you recently, Becky?
I haven't gotten any calls from Mayor Sugar.
I don't think, you know, I'm finding that it's not just me that Sugar doesn't return phone calls to. Apparently, he didn't return many of Scott Graham's calls. I read a letter in the paper recently from Dan Dickmeyer, who was concerned about the plaza, and Sugar didn't return his calls. I know Sugar used to have this technological problem, that his phone line was always full of calls at city council, and so maybe there was a problem there, but I think the problem is he just operates in a way that does not involve returning phone calls to people he disfavors, certainly, but also to other people. I mean, it's just a sort of an arrogance of power, which I think you find maybe... It's partially, you know, a function of attorneys, though. I think Celia Scott, even though I liked her, had a similar problem. She was, you know, I think she had the... I like Celia Scott a lot, and I don't think she has the same kind of problem Keith does. But what do you think? Let's get into a little psychoanalysis.
Well, when Keith Sugar first came on the council, And we found that his mailbox was full more often than not.
You mean his phone mailbox?
Yes, his phone mailbox, that you'd try to leave a message, and, you know, he wasn't checking his messages frequently enough, and, you know, it was hit or miss whether you could even leave a message, much less would he return a call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was what I was referring to, and I of course, played in the last show the rather stunning... I call it thuggy behavior by Sugar at the last council meeting, where he told me he wanted me out of there. And he told me that kind of like a bouncer would, drawing you aside, putting his arm on your shoulder, and acting like your friend, and then saying, get the fuck out of here.
Well, that was the third such incident that we've seen from Keith Sugar since he's been in office, directed at you, Robert.
Mm-hmm. Well, I recall, I know that I don't expect, you know, kid gloves treatment. I don't give kid gloves treatment to the city council. On the other hand, they're almost always invited to join meetings. They're invited to speak. It's true, when Chris Crone tries to turn a radio show into his own forum, I tend to interrupt him, asking him to answer the questions that I'm posing about homelessness and civil rights issues. But generally speaking, and that happened, I guess, about a month and a half ago in the Rotkin-Crone debate, No, I think Sugar has got a, you know, I guess you put it as an anger management problem. The real problem is not that. The problem is that no one on the city council, including Sugar, wants to stand up and lead on this issue of civil rights for homeless people and this incredible crisis that we obviously have about violence against the homeless.
Well, you can see that the Homeless Issues Task Force has been sort of the forgotten stepchild of all of the advisory boards for the city council. I'm looking at the web page that the City of Santa Cruz has, and it has all of these different commissions and task forces listed it looks like about 20 different task force or boards. All of them have websites you can go to that have agendas, minutes, the sorts of resolutions that have been passed. Only two don't. And one of those is the Homeless Issues Task Force. This is despite the task force repeatedly asking that their resolutions be posted on the web so that ordinary people can download them and see what they're doing.
No, ordinary people with computers, mm-hmm. anyway.
The other one that is not listed is the Alcohol Advisory Committee. And I believe that's the one that has a lot of Santa Cruz Police Department involvement.
Interesting. Well, I guess you called to let us know that there is a city council meeting in 2 days, Tuesday, 1 at 3 o'clock, for all of you would-be folks who want to get into the advisory boards. You can, you know, sign up. I think you got to go to the city clerk's office. It may even be too late. I'm not sure when the deadlines are, but you can still try, if you want, to get on these advisory boards if you're interested. And then that's at 3 o'clock down at City Hall. Then at 7 o'clock, it's going to be a plaza panorama, a parade of different kinds of critics and supporters. Should be kind of fun for those who like that. That's 7 o'clock Tuesday night. And there will be some discussion, I imagine, of lifestyle issues, where some say that the plaza will be overgrown with homeless fungi. You know, that would be a very definite drawback to the downtown, which is trying to present such a crisp and shiny image. Any thoughts on that?
Well, that's always the specter that's raised by those who are opposed to the downtown plaza. But you look, we have very little public space downtown other than the actual sidewalks themselves. And even those are encroached upon by sidewalk cafes. So a downtown plaza is a very common occurrence in cities throughout the world. Watsonville has one. I don't see that... that there's a big problem with it being turned into a homeless encampment. I've never heard that. But you can. The only thing similar to that at all would be around the town clock. And I know we've had problems there when large groups have gathered for speakers and everything. That there's so much traffic going by, it's quite dangerous, not enough room, and it's also very noisy there. So a downtown plaza really would enhance the community feel of Santa Cruz. I'm certainly in favor of it, and I would like the city council majority to move ahead on that.
Well, I probably will be seeing you then down at the city council meeting Tuesday night at 7. Anything more you want to report, Becky?
Nope, that's it for right now, but if I think of something else, I will call in.
Hey, thank you.
Sure.
And that's intrepid reporter and producer, video journalist, writer, hey, number of different hats, with Becky Johnson calling in. But her off the line means you can get on the line. We have one line into the studio. It's open, 427-3772. Want to talk about the plaza and homeless folks in the streets in terms of civil rights or anything else? Give us a call, 427-3772. Also, this show, I was able to secure a rather rare set of Phil Oakes songs. They've not been published, many of them. These are, for the first time, some of them are going to be heard, so I encourage you to stay tuned. We're going to be playing them. They're from the original Broadside tapes. We have an incoming call here, I think. Nope, I think we lost it. Call back, caller. We'll definitely get you on if you try and you didn't get in. Let's try that again. In the meantime, a little bit of Phil Oakes.
Okay, a song called Cruel Years. You can hold a little ways. The year was filled with a long sighing. The day was filled with a smell of dying. And mothers mourn their lost sons crying. These are the cruel years, years of dying. 4 years the sky was dark above, bluebirds of hate and not of love. How we long to see the dove. These are the cruel years, years of dying. How many prayers of peace were spoken? Tired eyes searched for a token. How many kids died till peace was chosen? These are the cruel years, years of dying. Then came the years of rebuilding. New lessons learned to teach the children, so they can go and die willing. These are the cruel years, years of dying. And now I ask you all together, another war can we weather? Shall we live or die together? These are the cruel years, years of dying.
Well, we're talking to Jim Costner, prisoner at large, or a much wanted man. Of course, we don't know where you're calling from, Jim, but what's happened? You're on the run, and on the run from what, man?
Well, I hope I'm not running too much. I was up in Seattle demonstrating at the WTO with all the courageous resistors up there, and then I went to Philadelphia and united with the MOVE organization for 2.5 weeks and worked with them. And then I was down in St. Petersburg, Florida, working with the African People's Socialist Party, which, as people know, there's a tremendous rebellion that went down in St. Petersburg back in '96, and there hasn't been one colonized person murdered by the police since that rebellion. And then before that, there has been many people get killed annually, many colonized, many Africans, many Rasta get killed. And this has been really a change down there with the struggle of the resistance. And then I was out in Arizona, with the Dene people momentarily, and now I'm in the Bay Area, and we're presently working on coordinating a speaking tour for Pamela Africa. She's coming out with 3 other MOVE members. She's coming out for 9 days of activities, and it's really beautiful because she's gonna be in Santa Cruz, Seaside, San Jose, San Francisco, and Oakland, and many of the different groups are all working together to make this happen and facilitate this. And I'm real glad that she's coming out, because right now it's very significant and profound, because Momia is going to go to court in mid-March, and that's going to be it for Judge Yon is going to make a decision regarding the evidentiary hearing regarding a new trial. So this is a very significant thing that Pamela's coming out of this time.
Wow.
It's the radio.
Well, I know, and you're here on the local scene. You've been an activist against police abuse and favor of decriminalizing homeless people such as fighting the city sleeping ban. And I know most recently you were, they hauled you out of the courtroom because you, smiled at Judge Attuck when they're in the middle of the Steve Argue trial. What happened to
that? I think the last time, I was removed, I think, three times during Steve's court processes, and the last time I was removed, I swear I don't even know what it was about, because I just inside I felt something. You know, I looked at the judge and thought, God, what an evil, wicked person. And then as soon as I felt, I didn't even say anything or do anything. As soon as I felt that, he looked at me with hatred, and next thing you know, he was asking the bailiff to have me removed.
So the judge is a telepathic psychopath.
That's very, very well said.
And you yourself are currently facing trial on what, two charges?
Well, now I have more charges because I was supposed to go.
And that's an interview with Jim Costner, an activist who has been fighting for a number of causes, as you can hear, including the city sleeping ban, to get that lifted, repealed, or modified. And he should be back in town, I guess, sometime in the near future, I'm hoping. I think he has some court dates pending, and that may or may not prove a complication. I'm not sure what that's going to lead to. We have an incoming call here, and I want to, by the way, apologize to folks who've been blasted or have been having trouble hearing. I'm having some trouble with my mic levels, so stay with me.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is Robert.
Oh, hey, Robert.
Good morning to you.
You, of course, are of the famous Robert and Eleanor combo.
Yeah,
you guys live in your vehicle and are kind of really... strong observers, and articulate observers of the homeless scene here in Santa Cruz.
Absolutely. And I just have a few comments that I'd like to say. Eleanor and I have been doing some talking, and it seems to me that, I think she mentioned this to you too, that it would be very difficult to elect even Superman if he wanted to run for mayor of this town.
You mean in terms of if we change the system to allow them to actually elect the mayor?
Yeah, by popular vote, mm-hmm. You know, because I mean, you know, you really are prevented from getting the right guy or the right gal in for the job because of the present system. As I understand it, you have to go along for about a year or two or whatever on the city council, and you have to have the most votes, and you know. It seems to me you're never going to get a person that you want. You need an initiative to change this.
Mm-hmm. Of course, then you might get Jerry Brown, and who knows what happens there. That's pretty horrible.
Well, you know, once again, though,
Jerry or Willie.
If you had a very tight rein around the person with the recall, I don't know what the rules are for the recalling of a mayor or a city council member in this town.
I think you need either 10 or 15% of the voters, registered voters at the last election, to sign a petition within... It's either 30 or 60 days to get a recall. It's difficult.
Oh, I see.
They tried it back in 1989 against Wormhout Lane and another man who eventually resigned, Mo Reisch.
I see.
Yeah.
So, but once again, along with an initiative to change the way the mayor is elected, should be something to tighten that up a little, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that you can, I mean, I don't believe that the homeowners, even in this town, are very happy. You know, from what we do a lot of talking, Eleanor and I, to people who are not homeless. They are housed, they have their own home. None of them seems to be against the humane treatment of the homeless. It just seems to be that the city council just keeps knocking it down because they're the ones that are against it.
It could be that certain interest groups are particularly powerful with respect to the city council. Although it's ironic, as I said earlier in the show, the Downtown Association, at least Peter Eberle, who is on the Homeless Issues Task Force and the executive director of the Downtown Association, did vote for this emergency December 6th resolution to suspend sleeping and camping ordinances pending safe zones. And Sugar refused to discuss it, put it on the ballot, and nobody else would, not the ballot, on the city council agenda, and nobody else would either. And also Michael Schmidt, at the last meeting of the city council on January 11th, emailed the city council saying he supported safe zones for homeless people, that there was a violence crisis. He said the same kinds of things that the Homeless Issues Task Force was saying. And Schmidt is a Chamber of Commerce CEO. He's always, you know, the big bad guy. On the left wing, wanted posters. But here he is, coming out with a perfectly sensible position. And he was at a Homeless Issues Task Force Shelter Subcommittee meeting on Thursday afternoon. I sat right next to him,
What's his name again?
His name is Michael Schmidt.
Yes, I see.
You know, and I'm not saying we should embrace all of his positions on all issues, but on this issue, he is taking the position there has to be places. He specifically looked at parking lot number 10 for people in vehicles. That's the parking lot that's kind of near Hobie's, if you know the restaurant Hobie's.
Yes, I do.
It's a three-level parking lot. The parking lots, the upper areas are empty at night. And, of course, we have parking lots going in all over town, though, as has been pointed out by Becky Johnson, who does a lot of work on the safe zone stuff. Some of these parking lots slant, so it's harder, you know, for people to be comfortable at night in vehicles. Still, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you in what you're saying.
Oh, it's okay. No problem.
No, I appreciate it. It's your dime. You're calling in there.
Oh, actually, it's a free call for me right now.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Yeah.
The thing is, on this business of power, you know, a body in motion tends to stay in motion, and a body at rest tends to stay at rest. And I'm going to use, like, two examples. Number one would be the mob in New York City, which everyone thought was an impenetrable thing. You could not get through. You're always going to have the mob, and now you don't. And the second one is the tobacco industry. Everyone thought, well, this big bad tobacco, you can never win against them. No one has ever got a dime from the tobacco company, was the saying, you know. And it was true up until a certain point. And now, of course, you see the tobacco companies are falling. They're in. Right now you're used to, let's say, a certain influence on the city council. It could just as easily be a city council that's too liberal, that folks are looking to tighten up on, that they're giving away too much, let's say. What you see is what you get here now, and you think it'll never go away, but it can go away. You can vote it out. You can get the initiative going, you know. You can change the way you elect a mayor. I don't think the homeowners are happy at all. We talk to them all the time. Now, turning my attention to that kitchen at the homeless shelter.
Oh, the $500,000 kitchen?
Yeah, I was thinking that while they're at it, while they're making such a kitchen, why not at the same time, it could be right there at the same time, turn the kitchen into a culinary school to teach.
Wow,
you know,
that's an
idea. Teach people. You can turn out cooks and prep people, sauce chefs, bakers, waiters, and waitresses. There should be a dining room out in the front where people would learn what it's like to come in the morning and set up the tables, your tables, when you're a waiter, you know, with all the utensils and everything, and make sure all the coffee's there and all the cold water and the ice and everything you need, and be a waiter, be a cook, be a prep person, be a sommelier, be a bartender. All these things could be set up, but probably you could get great cooperation from wine companies. Because they do, they're always out there pushing their products, and you could probably stock the shelves with all the wines and get a guy in there to give a little lecture on it, on this is what it's like, this is the differences, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
I have to bring that up to one of the few businesses that actually put the sign in their window downtown that said, "Let homeless and migrants sleep without fear of jail or tickets," part of our boycott bigotry. That was, and it's not there anymore, but it might be because it was only during the holidays that they kept it up.
Yeah.
That was the Sushi Now kiosk in front of New Leaf Market.
Oh, really?
And the man who runs the kiosk is always interested in homeless issues, and I think, who knows, maybe he's apparently one of these crème de la crème chefs who got his training in New York City.
Well, yeah, you know, and I am a cook myself from New York City, and I learned in some of those kitchens over there, those French places where you'd pay $40, $60, $80 a person, you know, and you have to know your sauces, you have to know so much about cooking.
Is that why you're so saucy? Is that the
You know, Robert, I was looking in a magazine called Worth Magazine. I don't know if it's the current issue. It's a quotation was in one of the stories there, and I ever since I read it, I couldn't get it out of my mind. It's by John Maynard Keynes, K-E-Y-N-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "When somebody persuades me that I am wrong, I change my mind. What do you do?"
Hmm.
You know, and, you know, it seems to me that our city council and our mayor aren't going to change their mind about something no matter what. It's like, you know, you can't make me like a big child, you know, baby Yui or some sort.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that I mean, being in the cooking field as I was and knowing about computers the way I do, it seems to me that you certainly better change your mind when you can be persuaded that you're wrong, because the world is turning pretty quickly, and there's a lot of smart people out there, and they know more than you do, and they are smarter, and their opinions are more valued because of the intelligence behind them.
Well, I don't think that we have to worry about changing, I'm sorry, but changing his mind in the sense of, they may not change their minds, but they may change the way they face and their behaviors when if enough people weigh in on the subject. That's why I often encourage people, and do again, to call City Council at 420-5020. This is the 24-hour line, and tell them, you know, enact the suspension of the sleeping and camping ordinances. There is a violence emergency. Your own police chief has told you so.
Yeah.
Why aren't you doing it?
Yeah.
But as you point out, you know, I've been saying that for a long time, you know, and it hasn't resulted in any changes, and it could be that they are intransigent. But it seems to me like in New York City, you know, when it took, you know, hundreds of people on the street in front of Giuliani's office to start the prosecution proceedings against the cops,
yeah,
that's the kinds of thing we need to do here.
Well, then the organization would have to turn to a really powerful person, a person who reaches people and is influential, someone who could get them there. Maybe it would have to be even on a day off, a Sunday or something. It could be at night. It could be something that a person like yourself could organize, probably. You have the airwaves, you know. People do listen to you.
As long as the FCC stays outside, yeah.
Well, for now they are, and there you are, you know. I mean, I don't want to, certainly can't lay any more work on you. You do a heck of a job.
No, I'm always eager to start working on this. In fact, I was thinking that this is really a key time. What would the police department, having reluctantly released all these really incriminating figures that show this incredible upsurge of violence, you know, in fact, I'm thinking of doing some tabling downtown to see if people want to join in a Seattle-style set of protests.
Yeah.
But I've been saying that for a while, and I really have to start hearing people on the phone line saying they're interested. And I guess I would encourage people who are listening, if you agree with Robert, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and say, yeah, I want to do that. I want to be a part of that. There actually is a letter that I wrote in this week's City on a Hill Press, which I'm going to read shortly, which makes that same appeal. I'm sorry. I don't mean to. You know, I do mean to cut you off because I love cutting
you off.
Oh,
I'm sure. You know, you have excellent points, and it's great to hear them and to air them. I noticed something else, and it's once again a little bit different on a different subject, because this guy Stefan, that's on Robert Stefan,
the umbrella man on
the umbrella
bench.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, I met him, you know, and I talked to him, and I consider myself about average in intelligence, and I can tell right off the bat that the man's got a few problems, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that since he was staying at that shelter, they should have seen the same problems like I did, because they're just about as observant. They see what I see.
Mm-hmm.
To try to put a person like this in a compartment to make him work, to make him, let's say, punch in and do a job or whatever, according to the way folks of really sound mind would be able to do, you can't do that. This town has a problem, I think, in differentiating between the mentally ill and antisocial or criminal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that he was not, when he stayed on the doorstep and he slept, he was not really defying them, because he wouldn't be held responsible for his actions in a court of law. He's that way, you know.
Of course, he was found guilty.
Well,
by
see,
a jury.
Well, you see, that's another thing. What kind of people? I mean, what have we got here that mentally ill people are held to the same standards that people who are without mental illness would be held? I mean, it'd be like trying to get a crippled guy to do the same physical labor that you're forcing upon someone else, you know. I mean, whether it's right or not to have people work in return for whatever they're giving, that's a question, put that aside.
Mm-hmm.
This is just one of a person who is not capable mentally of doing this, you know. And I find that's a big problem. You can't treat the mentally ill the same. Well, they're physically ill.
I think that's an important point. I don't know, you know, I think Robert would not agree with you that he is... Depends what you mean by mentally ill. Mentally ill can mean a number of things. It
that's
can mean
right. There are severely and there are just mildly.
Well, it can also mean that a man is unable to do a certain kind of work, but he may
absolutely.
He or she may have a very fine you know, awareness of reality and intellectually be quite on top of things.
Right, but try to force that person into you know, a certain routine, and I think it's just going to come right back at you. You know, it's the wrong thing. Holding down a job, you know, being there on time, accepting all the...
Well, we know what the state is planning. The state is planning to crack down on the mentally ill under the pretext of treating them. They're planning to destroy the Landrus-Petrus Short Act of 1967 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
And make it so that people can be incarcerated and forcibly treated with these...
drugs.
Big-time pharmaceutical monopoly-type drugs that, you know, that pad the
highly concentrated,
the pockets of some.
Yeah, highly concentrated, very, very dangerous drugs.
Right, psychotropic drugs, and that's coming our way. And actually, that's coming up this month, and we're going to hopefully try to get dear George Cavallo, who's the ombudsperson, to give us a call back. We've called him repeatedly. He won't get back to us or is having problems getting back to us, and we're hoping that others who are interested in this issue will get on the line. Well, Robert, I'm going to have to kind of wind it up. Is there more you want to say?
No, that's no problem, Robert. I just wanted to get a few things out there that maybe someone could think about.
Yeah, if people want to get into a real Action Huff group, we aren't really holding regular meetings of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, but we could. If I get a sufficient number of phone calls at 423-HUFF, I will definitely schedule a meeting. And
you could have it at the Rise Zone, right?
It could be at the Rise Zone, which is, of course, the kind of the info shop for Santa Cruz for a number of groups at 224 Walnut.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no point in doing it if people don't want to come, and that's what we need to figure it out.
Before we go, just one more thing, too. Mm-hmm. I always do encourage a lawsuit, and I still would, even for its value as a bargaining chip.
I think that's an excellent idea.
So even for that, a lawsuit, the changing of the way that we elect a mayor, pushing the arts in town, giving homeowners more incentive to go along with the homeless issues that you talk about would not be all these turning the kitchen into a culinary school. All these things. Would be very good to consider.
Not to mention some Seattle-style protests.
Well, that's true. How to make the most impact, that the sheer numbers might do it. If you could really get it, you'd have to plan for maybe a month or two or three in advance to get people that they're really will be able to attend and really will be able to hold up a poster or whatever it is they hold up at protests and let the city know. But I tell you, once again, that stick of the lawsuit, which would be needling away at them every week. They have to pay attorneys to file papers, to make presentations, and to make responses to whatever it is you're doing. That eventually, after 6 months, a year, works into a grind, and they have to justify it to the taxpayers.
You know, it's interesting you should say that. let me get off the line and talk more
about
this on the air. But
thank you, Robert.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye.
The idea of a lawsuit is, of course, excellent. You have to find the attorneys and the finances to do it, and also you have to have a person who's around long enough to do it. I recently won a small lawsuit at City Council. Actually, here's an incoming call. We'll talk about that after this next call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
And apparently that person didn't want to be on the air, but you can, if you want, reach us at 427-3772, 96.3 FM, Free Radio. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and again, we have another call coming in.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello. I was just listening to your speaker or your phone call person that just called in.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to say that I found it a little offensive that he would think that a homeless person, I believe he was speaking about the gentleman downtown.
Robert Steffen, yeah.
Yes. That gentleman or any other homeless person is insane for not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that some people make a choice not to work because they don't want to subscribe to the system that we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, refuse, so they don't work. And I don't think that that makes them insane. In fact, I think it makes them the opposite of insane.
You know, I agree with you. And I think that Robert, the other Robert who called in, would actually agree with you. I think what he was saying was not that the man is insane. He never used that word, as I remember. but he felt that he has an illness, which let's say
mentally ill.
I
that
hear
is
you.
Not, I don't like that.
Right. No, I understand. But I think what he meant by mentally ill was not that, because I remember I asked him about whether he thought the guy was intellectually competent, and he said
yeah.
But he said still that doesn't mean he can necessarily follow all the rules that everybody else can. And
but why does that make him mentally ill? Why does following rules make somebody, you know, more mentally savvy than someone who says, you know, I don't want to follow that rule because it doesn't make sense to me?
Following orders is a very important thing in America. You must follow orders. No, I get your point. I mean, there is really a question. I hear the word mentally ill. I don't see Robert Stephan as being mentally ill myself. Now, there are people who I respect who disagree with me in the sense that they say, you know, they think he's, you know, he's incoherent in some way. I think he's quite coherent. I think if you talk to him, you find he's quite articulate. I mean, he definitely has a political protest stance and has for a number of years on these issues. He hasn't just protested here in Santa Cruz. He's protested in Carmel. He was arrested in Beverly Hills for protesting an anti-homeless law about sitting on the sidewalk there. So he's, you know, he has a sort of a political position. So I tend to agree with you. I don't think, at least in terms of his political position, that I would characterize it as crazy or insane. I might say that he might find it hard to work or to keep a schedule of a kind that the Homeless Services Center wanted. They wanted him to, actually he claimed it wasn't that he found it hard to do, it was that he felt it was inappropriate.
Exactly.
Right. So your point is well taken. He was asked to clean up after other people that he thought were essentially being hostile to him. He said he was willing to clean up after himself but not after other people. And then they claimed that he smelled, and he went to the nurses and doctors, and they said, "You smell fine." And so they couldn't. And it seemed to be to some extent a factional, you know, personality thing with some of the monitors in the homeless services center. Problem. But then again, you know, I've had other people say, "No, he wouldn't do it. He was too intransigent. He was too stubborn." So I mean, I can't. You know, I'm not.
Yeah, we don't really know about that.
Right.
This particular person.
Right.
You know, honestly, but I still had to say that. I don't think it's fair to characterize any homeless person as being insane because, I mean, I realize there are some, or mentally ill, I realize there are some mentally ill people that were released during the Reagan era that are living on the streets now because they cannot take care of themselves, but I don't believe that everyone that is homeless is mentally ill.
Oh,
that's kind of like what I felt like I was hearing coming out, and I just wanted to make sure. And I know that that's not.
I'm pretty sure Robert doesn't think that, but I'm if he does, he should call in. I'm sure he will, and make that clear. But I think you're right.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else you want to say?
That's it.
Hey, thank you.
Bye bye.
And my apologies for the whistling phone line and so forth. Yeah, I appreciate your calling in. Boy, got lots of calls, 427-3772. Here's another one coming in at you. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, how you doing?
Hey, sounds like a battling Bob.
Well, Robert, good morning.
Good to hear you, Bob.
In regards to the last call about work and participating in the wicked system, I'm paraphrasing, I realize that. But what are the alternatives? And then, therefore, it's okay to get a free ride. Somebody picks up the tab would be my point, Robert.
Well,
and it's not dishonorable to participate.
Well,
in fact, it's highly honorable.
There are many ways of serving society and the community you live in, Bob. Some of it involves alternative kinds of work, which, you know, you do like women do a lot of work at home raising children, and they don't get paid for it, right?
No, but they do something.
Right.
They put in rather than take out.
Well, Robert Stephan would probably tell you that he puts in a lot of time on Pacific Avenue, essentially dramatizing the difference between you know, fancy upscale merchants and a town that has it illegal for homeless people to sleep at night or to be in public spaces.
Well, there's
a lot
of scavenger leechism disguised as communism, disguised as hip anarchistic politics, when really in reality it's just scavenger leechism.
Well, at the top as well as at the bottom, you know, you got the CEOs that are scamming off the top big time, right?
Well, yeah, and let's address that. I mean, and I'm for that. Let's address the disparity. Let's address the compensation. But let's also realize that to have the kind of society that we have, and I doubt most of us would give up our radios or our electricity, to have this kind of society, you have to have some kind of compensation. And people that can show up for work on time want to be paid. People that are organized want to be paid. So there's going to be a disparity. Now, I think that something should be done with the bottom in regards to the cost of living. But I think we need to admit that it's important to participate. And if someone really disagrees and thinks the system's wicked and all that, well, do something that shows that you can you can accomplish something differently.
Well, I've been trying.
Like organize a co-op.
Right.
All the socialist types out there, well, go pull off a co-op.
Mm-hmm.
Show people what you're about rather than this rant.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bob, now that I've got you on the line, you, of course, were responsible for lots of hard work around the rent stabilization initiative. And, you know, that was a hard won or a hard lost fight. And I imagine it's not been lost yet. It's going to continue to be fought. What about the plaza? You know this plaza thing coming up. Any thoughts on that situation?
I favor and have favored a pedestrian mall on Pacific Avenue for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it would raise real estate values like it's done in Burlington, Vermont, Boulder, Colorado, Eugene, Oregon, Santa Monica. Santa Cruz is not all that progressive in certain ways. It's certainly not progressive in regards to modifying the 100-year car culture that's been produced in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something like a pedestrian mall would go a long ways towards humanizing the community center. I have hesitancy in regards to it's Mr. Rittenhouse's private property. He was not asked, as far as I can ascertain. It would be an eminent domain kind of thing. So in that sense, I have a hesitancy, but in the sense of the community benefiting from a plaza, I can see where it would be positive. I don't think it removes one iota away from the general idea of a pedestrian mall, which is 3 out of 5 blocks closed to traffic and turned into a park-like setting.
Have you attempted to
Pacific.
Bob, have you attempted to bring that idea to the city council? I mean, are they, you know, have you talked to any council members
about
it?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, with all these issues, with issues like, for example, like why doesn't Santa Cruz subsidize fuel cells within its infrastructure where it can? Why are there not proponents? This is in my opinion. Why are there not proponents for desalination plants if we're going to use government for other than giving our cronies advanced positions? Well, then let's be leaders about this kind of stuff. What I don't want to do is come on abrasive, come on necessarily confrontational.
Well, fuck you, Bob. Just kidding.
Okay. So in the sense, when I hear comments like I don't want to aberrate the process from a leader, from someone who's elected in an office.
You're talking about what Chris Krohn said when you approached him looking to get him to endorse rent control, rent stabilization?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's such a profoundly characteristic statement to
mm-hmm.
make. Millennium politics. This we'll look into it, we'll consider taking action kind of nonsense. I don't want to aberrate the process by publicly stating my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then what are you about? Are you a manager? Are you a leader? What are you about? Are you about waiting for there to be a bandwagon before you take a position on it?
Well, to ask the question is to answer it, I'm afraid.
Okay, so that's where it's at for me. At this point, I think I want a little breather. I think rent control.
Well, you're working hard on the hemp festival coming up.
The Hemp Expo is May 13th and 14th at the Civic,
mm-hmm.
and we'll have about 75 or more booths. In fact, we have opened an office this weekend at 224 Walnut. We're subleasing from
that's the
TEDx people.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's a big step for us.
Wow.
In fact, we have a new front end, a new phone number, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we have become de facto the trade show for the hemp industry here in Santa Cruz. This is our third show coming up. In May, and we're going to have a hemp parade on Pacific Avenue Sunday morning, and it's developing into quite the big deal. The booths are moving virtually by themselves. So, I mean, I have a political bend to me, and I like provocative issues, Robert. Rent control to me, and I'll use the phrase no-brainer. Rent control in Santa Cruz Millennium is a no-brainer. You got to live somewhere. Somebody's going to work at a shop on
particularly
Pacific
since
Avenue.
It's illegal to sleep in your car. I mean, thank you
well,
very much.
You know, there again, Santa Cruz, yeah. How progressive is this town? Eugene,
yeah.
Oregon has had ordinances that set aside areas where people can sleep who are down and out for years. This is not some kind of a revolutionary idea where let's recognize that people fall through the cracks, okay?
Yeah, one wonders what is wrong with this council. I know that
they're managers, Robert. They're not leaders.
That's certainly true.
They're not
going to
stick their neck out because they'd rather be in power than do something significant with the positions that they've been given.
Well, I know that David Silva has begun. I got an email from him the other day. He's asking people to sign up for one day of fast from either food or sleep or both. He's calling it a rolling fast going on until March 1st. And he also, with Sandy Brown and one other person, has gotten together a new sleeping ban initiative he's trying to circulate. I'm always wary of these last-minute initiatives. He only has 3 months to do it. But, you know, one certainly can't question the substance of the objective that he certainly is seeking, which
it
is...
It raises the issue. No, you can't.
Yeah, decriminalize sleeping in some parts of the city, you know.
Hey, any comments about Lisa Rose resigning from the Police Review Board?
Oh, you know, my that one article where I finally made the Sentinel for the first time. My name is, I was going to talk about that. Lisa Rose, as some folks may know or may not know, was the former chair of the Citizens Police Review Board and then kind of led the conservative faction, although in my mind now all the factions on that board are pretty conservative. Even the new appointees, Arnie Leff, Becky Blythe, and Sandy Brown, she's resigned. Well, the last time I saw her, it seemed quite fitting. She was running around in security outfits on New Year's Eve, making sure that people, you know, obeyed the law. So I think her real future career lies in law enforcement. And I'm glad that she took my advice, which was, I shouted at her as she walked by. Well, I said to her as she walked by, and she was disappearing down the street, "Lisa, it looks like you found your niche. Join the police department. Dump the police review board." And something to that effect. And she, I think, picked up on that.
One last comment here. I found it very discouraging that the Sentinel did an article on homeless beatings, which I thought was good.
Yes.
But your name was not mentioned. And the issue would not have been raised,
well,
I think in all sincerity, without you, Mr. North.
Well, the way to deal with that is, of course, to have a number of people beat me up, preferably homeless people, and it would make headlines.
On that fine note, have a good afternoon, Robert.
Thank you.
All right, talk to you later.
And I hope the levels on that were okay. That was Bob LaMonica, a hardworking man. We often disagree. If he sees me with a pie at city council, he'll probably have me arrested. But, hey, I may have to show up with a chocolate cream pie. Here's an incoming call. Hey, I'm glad you guys are calling in. Keep it up.
Free radio, you're on the air.
Hi, Robert. This is Eleanor.
Hey, Eleanor.
I just wanted to call in to kind of add my two cents to the Robert's call and then to the person who called right after him.
She was concerned that Robert was calling Robert Stephan insane.
Right. Well, you know, I don't. It's clear that he wasn't saying that, but I feel that her reaction typifies the stereotypical view of people who might have an emotional or a mental problem, which doesn't mean that you're insane. I mean, half the nation's on Prozac, you know. People are CEOs, and they're taking drugs to keep themselves going and all that. So it's not a matter. I thought that he was clear that he's insane. I mean, to have a handicap or a disability of any sort doesn't blanket cover every other area of your life.
Now we should say that you and Robert are partners.
Yes,
and you live in a vehicle yourself.
Right, and he's just as homeless as Robert Stephan.
And
he's not insane.
And you actually spent some time talking to Robert Stephan.
Oh, we love him. We go visit him. We do. We visited him when he was ousted to the second bench, and Robert did, not me, because I'm disabled, and I'm not insane, but I'm disabled, very disabled, but that doesn't make me any less a person in so many other ways. But I'll tell you right now, I can't work.
Now, did you secure a phone that you could actually use without standing up, or are you standing up?
I'm sitting down. I've borrowed the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom cell phone, and I'm sitting down.
Excellent. I'm glad. Because I know that you're in great pain when you try to stand up.
I can't stand more than a few minutes, and then what happens is I start focusing on not hurting, and I can't follow my conversations, and so I don't do anybody any good. And in fact, I make matters worse. But we did see Robert. Robert brought him some fruit. Talked with him and told him, we'd heard him on the radio, your show,
mm-hmm.
and told him he thought he was great, which he is. He is very articulate.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw him, we visited him again right after his court date. We went there to see him, to see if he got his way, and we were delighted that he was on his bench again, and we got a parking. I'm disabled, so I have a handicap placard, and the space next to Robert's bench was vacant, and so we got a chance to pull in and talk with him for a while and cheer him. We were delighted, really we are. And
so you don't think Robert's crazy?
Not at all. I love him. I wish I wasn't disabled. I'd love to go sit and talk with him because I like his mind.
And the previous caller who called in who talked about his concern that Robert is, you know, may be mentally ill does not mean you think he's crazy.
Absolutely not.
Do you think Robert is mentally ill?
Me?
Yeah. Doctor?
I don't know if I would call him mentally ill. Because I'm not a doctor, I really lack the vocabulary. I'm sure that there would be more.
And the salary, I might add.
Right. And none of the perks.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say that he's mentally ill. I would say that there might be some sort of
He's probably getting physically ill from being out on sleeping under a bridge every night.
I don't know how he can do it. I really don't. God bless him. But, and I shouldn't say that. I said God bless it to him, and he shook his head, because I say that all the time. And
yeah, his sign says there is no God.
I quickly grabbed my mouth with my fingers, and I said, I'm sorry. He said, that's okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I respect him. I respect his feelings, and that's what I like to talk to him about, because I'm sure he's clear about the way he feels, and I'm so clear about the way I feel, and so I'd like to learn the way he feels.
Eleanor, there's been a lot of, there was some talk about how church parking lots are underused or not being used enough, or there aren't enough of them for homeless people, based on the buyer's exception that was passed back in 1995.
Yeah, I think that's the one good thing she's ever done.
Yeah,
I shouldn't say it too loud. She may take it back.
Right. That's sleeping band buyers for you. Well, yeah, she passed this exception, the council did actually, with Kennedy and her pushing it, to make it legal for people to sleep with written permission in the parking lot of a church, three vehicles maximum. You've been doing that pretty regularly?
Oh, yes, steadily, since we first became homeless.
How many people would you estimate are able to use that? Do you have any way of knowing?
Well, I don't know if it's a matter of able or out there going out there and getting it. The parking lots are empty.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know why, whether the people don't go out there to try and get it, or that they're being turned down.
Well, you may be aware that Community Action Board Director, or I should say Shelter Project Director, Paul Brindell, who gave a presentation at the January 11th City Council meeting as part of the Homeless Issues Task Force, said that churches were calling him and saying that they did not want their names mentioned if they allowed people to sleep there. So they wanted to keep it under wraps. Did you find the same thing from the churches that you stayed at, that they want it kept hush-hush?
I only had one church do that.
How many have you stayed at?
One, two, three, four.
Uh-huh.
I only had one do that. He was very peculiar about it. And he didn't want even his congregation or his board of directors, not his congregation so much. I don't believe he was afraid of them. I know what he was afraid of. It was his board of directors that he had to answer to, and he was afraid of losing his job mm-hmm. with them. But that was the only person, and we moved on. In fact, we still have permission there if we want to, but we moved on for other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really in a good place now. I don't find that. I just don't understand why.
Are most of these churches within the city limits?
It's underutilized. That's what Robert was saying. Yes, go ahead, Robert.
I'm sorry. Most of them are underutilized?
Yeah. I mean, you can drive around and you can see nobody's there. There are some people doing it. But you can drive around, you can see they're not being used. And while we're on the subject, I think it's unconstitutional for the city council to tell a church how many people they can help or can't help.
Well, it's interesting. We had, of course, a show with Wiley Drake of Buena Park.
I heard him. Oh, he's fantastic, isn't he?
He is. He's quite a guy.
And I think we should have his lawyer send a letter.
He's fighting we're hoping to get the organization in Washington that he was working with to send a letter of condemnation to the Santa Cruz City Council. How many of these churches that you've stayed in, Eleanor, parked your vehicle in and slept overnight in, how many of them are actually inside the city limits?
I think all of them are. I'm not certain. I don't want to start mentioning names.
I mean, they should know that it's interesting, because I know some of the churches, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is the program that puts, I guess it's 28 people in the summer and maybe 56 in the winter on church
floors.
Yeah, I've
seen them. We've participated in churches where they came. You know, churches that we stayed at, some of the churches were churches.
Well, what I'm saying is that the people who sleep on the floor are doing so illegally. It is illegal for a church to let people sleep on their floor under the camping ban ordinance.
Well, that's why we got to get
Isn't
these
that amazing?
People out.
I mean, it is actually illegal. The only place it's legal to sleep is inside a domicile. A domicile, and churches are not domiciles, so therefore,
that's disgraceful.
You know, it's amazing.
Disgraceful.
But it's also selective. What I'm saying is they have let churches do this for years, some of them, that are part of this program. But when individuals do it, or when churches who are really trying to, let's say, politically active churches do it, they crack down on them. It's just like with feeding. the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program feeds people who come in these church groups on the floor before it puts them to bed for the night on the floor. It gives them a little meal. That's illegal under the State Food Facility Permit Act. No one has ever raised it except when groups like Food Not Bombs does it, or when groups like SWAP, Soup Without a Permit, the Santa Cruz group in 1989 did it. So there's really a differential standard.
Well, they're picking and choosing. I saw the same thing in front of the post office. This is something that my partner, Robert, this is a real pet peeve of his. During the month of March, every single day, can you hear me okay?
I can. Yeah, a little bit of static, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
They have out front of the East Station post office a table set up, and they have brownies and Girl Scouts running around playing, you know, and an adult there, and they're selling Girl Scout cookies, and they're hawking. They're hawking to every person who goes by, and that's fine. However, before they were there and after they were there, if Phil, the man who, he's a homeless man who sells street spirit, they chastised him. He'd have to hide around the corner by the machines like he was some sort of a subversive or something to sell a street newspaper. They pick and choose.
It's interesting because that particular issue, I mean, we know that the merchants go after people, or the cops go after people who are trying to sell their jewelry on the street or something.
Yeah, you know. Speaking of merchants and the police, I think that we have another problem here too, among others, but specifically that our police don't seem to be able to discern the difference between a troublemaker on the street and just a homeless person. They can't see. Robert brought that up about people who might be mentally ill or people who might be physically ill or whatever. Oftentimes you might appear mentally ill, but you're really just physically ill, and you can't physically do what's expected of you with the next guy. And I can appreciate that because I was in one piece for all my life until about 4.5 years ago, and I was blessed with incredible stamina and energy and a quick mind, and I don't have that now. And I
can't. Still got the quick mind, Ellen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I see I was doing it to myself, too. The mind is still quick. It's the spine that's gone. Mm-hmm. And because of, in my situation, I don't want to pour my heart out because I don't really mean it to be that, but only that I know it from firsthand and didn't need to experience this to know it, that you might just physically not be able to do or say things, but that doesn't mean the mind isn't totally intact. Which once again would bring us back to Robert Steffen. His mind may be totally intact, but to compartmentalize people, and I believe that the caller after the woman was saying something about you got to give something back. Well, what if you can't? What in God's name is wrong with lifting up a person and keeping him up there without having to get something back from him? Just that you saved him should be enough.
You know, it's interesting. I'm gonna jump. I agree with you. I want to jump back to this thing with Phil, the newspaper seller.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you brought this up because, of course, there's been a large controversy. I recently, some months back, I filed a complaint against Chief Belcher, first complaint against the police chief I'm aware that has been filed in our jurisdiction in some time, because he sent me a letter which essentially covered up the whole Steve Argue newspaper vending thing, there was a controversy as to whether people should be able to sell street newspapers. Actually, there was no controversy.
There were
police officers going out harassing people selling newspapers in violation of the city code. That is to say that it was completely legal to sell papers. There is a specific provision that says you don't need a license. You can sell street papers as long as you have
them
on you.
Not all of our force knows all of their laws.
Well,
right?
So what happened was back in September of last year, Chief Belcher wrote me a letter apologizing in the Anthony Douglas case, saying
in essence,
you know, that this guy was improperly dealt with and we're sorry about that. And I thought, well, that's a step forward. Then, of course, when the harassment continued and when Argue was arrested and brutalized, thrown into jail for 4 days in November of 1998, again, about a year and a half ago, we were concerned about that, and the Police Review Board, of course, rubber-stamped the police department, and Belcher sent a different letter that said, it had nothing to do with selling a street newspaper. He was blocking the sidewalk, which, of course, contradicted all the police reports.
Change the rules as you go along.
And, of course, right, and recently the Police Review Board has come up and, of course, whitewashed and ratified and rubber-stamped the police chief's story, even though the police reports are flagrantly different. It's interesting. But what interested me was you said that an individual last spring, you were talking about, I take it, March of 99, was being harassed for selling street newspapers.
Yeah.
Again, this was Belcher, the one thing the Police Review Board did find in my favor on about two or three weeks ago was that Chief Belcher was to be criticized because he took 2 months from September of 98 to November of 98 to inform his police officers that selling street newspapers was legal.
Oh, boy.
Yet you're telling me that 5 months later, in March of 1999, his police force was still harassing homeless yeah. street vendor of newspapers?
Well, I never saw the harassment. I talked with Phil, and Robert talked with Phil a few times, and I could see his behavior. He was afraid. He was around the side, not by the entrance, and just afraid to come out and say anything. And I just felt that that was wrong, because you had these gals out there really hawking every single person that went by.
Well, you know, I would say a homophobic group like the Girl Scouts, which doesn't allow lesbians or gays involved, is a much...
Oh, really? Them too now?
No, I don't know. Let me put it this way. The Boy Scouts, of course, have that reputation.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that the Girl Scouts are the same, and I would love to have some Girl Scout person call in and tell me otherwise, and maybe
right. My point is, and I didn't really want to name groups or name, it just seems to me that they're picking and choosing. And I think it's like they have to do something, and they do the wrong thing.
And I think that...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that the answer to that is unfortunately not through the Citizens Police Review Board or the City Council, but has to be through direct action by the citizenry, like yourself. And of course, for people who are disabled and who have can't leave their cars easily, like you, that's no easy matter. But for many of us who can use our legs more easily, if you see police officers engaging in stops with homeless people, the most important thing to do is to stop and watch.
Yes.
You know, it really is. Even if they tell you everything is okay, everything's rosy, everything's hunky-dory, if everything's okay, then there should be no problem with your watching.
You know, while we're on the subject of the police, I really feel that our police are being abused. You may not agree with me, mm-hmm. and maybe a lot of people don't, but I really do... Robert says this is sure going to open up the lines. I really feel they're abused, and I'll tell you why. Because I don't believe that many of them, or any at all maybe, of these people who have become police officers became police officers so that they could wake people sleeping at night. I don't think that was in their mind when they wanted to become a cop. I think that they were, if nothing else, idealistic about enforcing laws and protecting people, and what we're using them as, I think, is disgraceful. And I believe that a lot of these officers go home with a knot in their stomach over this. They're being used to enforce a law that shouldn't be.
Yeah.
We've had experiences with wonderful police officers. We had an incident where in the middle of the night, we were intimidated. We were threatened physically, mm-hmm. and we were fortunate enough to get away, and we went to a phone, and we called the police, and told the police, we identified ourselves, and that we were homeless, and told the police what happened. And while I was on the line, the person who took the call was wonderful to me, and I told her I couldn't stand. She wanted to keep me on the line till the officer came to make sure we were okay, mm-hmm. but I couldn't stand, and she said, okay, sit in your car and he'll come.
When was this?
This was, I think, in September.
Last year?
Yeah, this past September, mm-hmm. and the police officer came.
Do you know his name?
No, shame on me. I should have gotten it, mm-hmm. and I was really sorry I didn't.
Yeah, it's also important to file commendations when police do act properly, and I've done
definitely.
That, too.
Definitely. This guy, when he was done talking to us, he shook our hands. And I want to tell you something. Robert tried to get Keith Sugar's attention at the farmer's market one time when he was busily trying to muscle Bob LaMonica, and he ran from Robert. He wouldn't talk to Robert because Robert wanted to tell him about this. This officer knew that we were in danger and that we couldn't really safely be back in that spot, but he also knew that he told us that he had no place that we could go. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a place for him to tell us that we could go. He couldn't recommend anything because he knew that it wasn't legal for us to be anywhere and we'd have to wait till the daytime to contact another church. And so there we were at 3 o'clock in the morning in danger. And he was apologetic and he shook our hands. And he advised us how to deal with it. He went to see the person, and he said he told us, and he came back later.
The person who'd harassed you mean?
Yes, he came back later too. He told us to. The police officer came back later on and passed by and swept the lot with his light to check to make sure that we were okay. And I've had other instances with police officers, and off the top of my head, I can't say. I can't think of one of them. Robert just said, I can't think of one of them who walks away without shaking our hands.
Well, that's great. I mean, it could be also that, you know, that your condition makes these officers more mindful of their real responsibility.
Their real responsibility, which is to, you know, serve and protect.
Exactly, exactly. I don't know if it's condition or not, but maybe it's because I can articulate my condition. Maybe it's because, I don't know what it is, but all I can tell you is that I don't believe that many of our police officers feel good about what they have to do. I think they would jump for joy if they could find a person and say, listen, if not wake them if they're out of sight, but if they are up, tell them they can go somewhere. And let them sleep if they're not bothering anybody. Many times you talk on the air about police officers who aren't up to snuff. That's only a handful of them. We have 100 police officers. There's only a handful, the same names keep coming up, that aren't the good guys, that perhaps need to be better trained, perhaps just... I'm sorry? Robert said need to be fired. Probably. It's true. But I just wanted to get that point across, because I don't want to take credit for it, and I don't know why it's been that way for us, but it has been that way.
It's interesting to hear, Eleanor, and I know that you also have been corresponding with Mayor Sugar, trying, at least you've been, from one side anyway.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I always forget to tell you. I wrote to Mayor Sugar. I called him a few days before the December 14th meeting, and I wrote to him a letter, which he didn't answer, and he didn't adopt what I asked him to.
What did you ask him to adopt?
I asked him to lift the sleeping ban. I told him that people elected him. He had a landslide victory for his views that he perpetrated, and the people are with him and for him. And if he would just be consistent and adopt those views and stand up for what he knows is right, and know that the people are behind him, he doesn't need to be pals with everybody else on the city council. He just needs to do what he believes in. And I wished him good luck, and I told him I wish God would guide him in this, and let God guide him as to what he did. He didn't do it. And he didn't answer me. I then wrote a letter to Tim Fitzmaurice, Councilman Fitzmaurice, who answered me.
Mm-hmm.
And he thanked me for the advice, because, among other things, I felt that we should have some safe zones and have open up some buildings. And then when I got that encouragement from him, I investigated a couple of places, and I wrote him a letter. Earlier this week I mailed it. Asking him to call these landlords, and one of them is a vacant industrial building down on Dubois, which has been vacant a very long time, and it would be a good place to open up to let people sleep in, because it's far back from the street, and it's vacant open lots on either side of it. And I believe that the landlord would be conducive. And the other one was, there was another lot that's an open lot, which is behind the UPS building. It's a corner lot, and that would be, it's huge, and away from, it's off the beaten path, and it's an industrial area. There's nobody there at night, and it would be a good outdoor safe zone.
Mm-hmm. Well, Fitzmaurice, more than perhaps any of the other council members, though Byers also returns her calls regularly, does return calls. His trouble is, when you get into the public comment, into the public action section of city council, he's just not there, or he's babbling away, and he's not dealing with anything on an action basis. Now, some people...